This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
Welcome to our show. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and hello those of you who have declared your independence from religion, and to everybody who's listening.
And I'm Dan Barker, your independent, friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. This is Independence Day weekend. This is the July 6th, 2013 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. We broadcast in New York, Michigan, California, Missouri, other parts of the country, and podcast throughout the independent universe.
Free Thought Radio is FFRF's weekly production. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is the nation's largest association of freethinkers, atheists, and agnostics. And we work to keep religion out of government. And we're going to tell you about one of our new lawsuits.
And we're also going to tell you today how you can help save a preacher. We're going to talk with a Pentecostal minister who's now a non-believer, who has found independence from religion.
We had Jerry DeWitt on the show back in 2011, just a few weeks after he publicly came out as an atheist and left the Pentecostal ministry. And now he has a new book. It's hot off the press. It was just released, Hope After Faith, An Ex-Pastor's Journey from Belief to Atheism. And a lot has happened to Jerry since then, and he'll tell us about it in the second half of today's show.
But first, let's celebrate the birth of our proudly rebellious secular nation.
We fought a revolution. We took a stand to declare our independence from kings. We knew that we, the people, could rule this land and show the world how true freedom rings. We wrote a constitution, the very first, to separate the church from the state. No one can tell the people what to believe, and that's what makes this nation so great. We will bow down to no master, we will kowtow to no lord. We're a free secular nation, we are servants no more. To the old sovereign rulers, we will no longer nod. We are e pluribus unum, not one nation under God.
We are e pluribus unum, not one nation under God. In fact, e pluribus unum was America's original motto.
And what does that mean?
Out of many, e pluribus, come one, unum. E pluribus unum. If we had to change the national motto, it should be not in God we trust, it should be in reason we trust.
And in fact, that is the phrase that we placed on an exciting educational campaign that we hope some of you caught this week around the country. FFRF placed more than a dozen full-page ads in major newspapers and also in some of the Bible Belt area, and the New York Times, LA Times, Chicago Times, Tribune, Arizona Republic. And this is to counter this annual July 4th religious propaganda by Hobby Lobby, in which it tries to say that we're a Christian nation, one nation under God, a theocracy. So you can check our website at ffrf.org/news to see all the cities where we placed our ad. And the ad features founders and constitutional framers, their images and quotes. And so, Dan, why don't you read some of that?
The headline is, Celebrate Our Government's Independence from Religion. We have a picture of Thomas Paine, and here's what he said. Whenever we read the obscene stories, the voluptuous debaucheries, the cruel and tortuous executions, the unrelenting vindictiveness with which more than half the Bible is filled, it would be more consistent that we call it the word of a demon than the word of a God. It is a history of wickedness that has served to corrupt and brutalize. That's from his book, The Age of Reason, published in 1792.
And you can still order that from FFRF.org. It's a classic.
And we comment on Payne by saying the revolutionary who gave the United States of America its very name and who fanned the flames of the American Revolution utterly repudiated Christianity and the Bible. Thomas Paine wrote, "My religion is to do good, and my own mind is my own church."
Oh, Benjamin, you want me to read some?
Yeah, when
Benjamin Franklin, we have him, a quote from Works, Volume 8. "When a religion is good, I conceive it will support itself. And when it does not support itself, and God does not take care to support it, so that its professors are obliged to call for help of the civil power, 'tis a sign, I apprehend, of its being a bad one."
He was talking about vouchers, wasn't he?
And so this revolutionary, who was a deist, suggested that the motto on our currency should read, "Mind your business." As Secretary of the Constitutional Convention, Benjamin Franklin recorded there was no prayer and little support for his own motion to have prayer. And in his minutes, he wrote, "The convention, except three or four persons, thought prayer unnecessary."
Then we have a picture of George Washington, and his quote is, "Religious controversies are always more productive of more acrimony and irreconcilable hatreds than those which spring from any other source." That was in a letter he wrote to Sir Edwin Newenham in 1792. Our very first U.S. president refused to take communion, to kneel in prayer in churches or at Valley Forge. He refused to have a priest at his deathbed or to take last rites.
The ad features John Adams, his picture and quote and signature. "The government of the United States is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion." That is from the Treaty of Tripoli, signed. It was actually negotiated under George Washington. It was unanimously adopted by the Senate, and signed by President John Adams, 1797. "Our second president did not believe in miracles or prophecies, eternal damnation or demonic possession, and fought to separate, church and government in his home state, Massachusetts. Although dying on the same date as Jefferson, July 4th, 1826, Adams' dramatic last words were, 'Jefferson lives.'"
And Thomas Jefferson, who said, "Question with boldness even the existence of a God, because if there be one, he must more approve of the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear." He wrote that to his nephew, Peter Carr. He was our third president, the author of the Declaration of Independence, the Statute of Religious Freedom, guaranteeing that no citizen, quote, "shall be compelled to frequent or support any religious worship, place, or ministry whatsoever," unquote. As president, Jefferson explained the First Amendment, that it builds a wall of separation between church and state, in his letter of January 1st, 1802, to the Baptists of Danbury, Connecticut. Shall I keep reading? James Madison is in the ad. "During almost 15 centuries has the legal establishment of Christianity been on trial. What have been its fruits? More or less in all places, pride and indolence in the clergy, ignorance and servility in the laity, in both superstition, bigotry, and persecution." Madison wrote that in his Memorial in Remonstrance in 1785. He was our fourth president, the primary architect of our godless and entirely secular U.S. Constitution. He opposed even 3 pence of tax money being used in support of a religion. James Madison opposed congressional chaplains and government day of prayer. He warned that, quote, "torrents of blood have been spilled over religious differences." And the ad ends with the phrase, "Jefferson lives. Support America's precious constitutional principle separating religion from government." And the ad includes the original godless Pledge of Allegiance.
"I pledge allegiance to the Constitution of the United States of America." "And to the Republic for which it
from the song We the People on FFRF's Friendly Neighborhood Atheist album. It has, it has a version of the original pledge, One Nation Indivisible. There's no God there.
So after the break, I will tell you a remarkable coincidence about the 4th of July. Two remarkable coincidences, actually, and one dealing with American music.
And in the second half of the show, we'll be talking with Jerry DeWitt, author of Hope After Faith, An Ex-Pastor's Journey from Belief to Atheism.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
We will bow down to no master. We will kowtow to no king. We're a proud secular nation. We will let freedom ring.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we are co-directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You can join us, not someday, but today, at FFRF.org. And by the way, especially those of you who are in the Madison area, FFRF is in the middle of a very exciting building expansion. We are so crowded that people are practically sitting in each other's laps, and we have attorneys practically working in closets.
Spilling out of the windows.
And we have purchased the property next door, and over the next year are building a 4-story addition with an auditorium and a studio and a legal wing and a library. And we hope you'll look at our plans on our website at FFRF.org and contribute to this expansion and make Free Thought more visible.
Make Free Thought Hall become born again.
And let us hire a few more staff. So we're so busy with all of these state church violations and promoting Free Thought.
And please drop by and visit us next year after all the construction.
Yeah, we're a bit crowded.
Now, as we mentioned in the first segment, it truly is amazing that the two American presidents, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, died on the same day. They died on the 4th of July, 1826, exactly 50 years after the Declaration of Independence. But do you know who was born on that very day, on July the 4th, 1826? The early American songwriter, who's still popular today, Stephen Foster, was born July 4th, 1826.
You know, Campdown Races and Old Kentucky Home, and so many famous songs, and he was a freethinker. And there were a lot of songwriters and composers who were non-religious that we've talked about on the show, but I don't think we have talked in any detail about Stephen Foster's non-believing credentials.
Well, he didn't exactly call himself an atheist, but he was a thoroughly non-religious, non-churchgoer. Stephen Foster wrote the first great American popular songs. He was the first American songwriter to support himself from music sales, and he helped to propel the music industry in its infancy. From his 1848 O Susanna, which was his first hit, through Camptown Races, through Old Folks at Home, which has the line, "Way down upon the Suwannee River," My Old Kentucky Home, Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair, and many other songs, Foster produced a body of music that's been remembered and performed longer than the works of any other American songwriters. The songwriter Irving Berlin honored Stephen Foster by quoting part of Suwannee River in his first hit, Alexander's Ragtime Band. In fact, Irving Berlin had a picture of Foster on his office wall. George Gershwin also paid Stephen Foster a similar tribute with his first hit song, Suwannee. They knew that if you wanted to tap into the culture of America, you have to start with Stephen Foster. Little is known of Stephen Foster's inner religious views, but he lived and worked as if he were not a believer. He was a nonconformist. He never joined a church. He rarely attended services. None of his music can be said to have been inspired by religious faith. The songs that he chose to write of his own volition were purely secular. Toward the end of the life, though, this is tragic. When he was very poor and he was very hungry, because he had sold all of his songs way too early back then, before the age of royalty contracts, and so he was forced to find work wherever he could. He accepted an assignment writing Sunday school songs. A biographer named Ken Emerson writes, As his life hit rock bottom, Foster, who never expressed much interest in religion, who had resisted the urgings of his sisters Anne, Eliza, and Henrietta to join the church, wrote nearly 30 songs for Sunday schools. He hadn't found God, but he had found a publisher. Those songs, which went into the Sabbath School Bell No. 2, were part of an endeavor to indoctrinate children with catchy music, sometimes setting religious words to secular music. The song Sorrow Shall Come No More is actually a rewrite of Stephen Foster's earlier secular song, Hard Times Come Again No More. The song We Love the Happy School was set to Foster's earlier song, Some Folks. The fact that the lyrics were changed shows that the original songs were not suitable for religious purposes. Perhaps the original lyrics to Some Folks, written in 1855, give us a glimpse into Stephen Foster's liberal attitude of live and let live, as well as his celebration of life before death. Some of the words appear to be a rebuke to Puritanism.
Some folks like to sigh, some folks do, some folks do, some folks long to die. But that's not me nor you. Long live the merry, merry heart that laughs by night and day, like the Queen of Bath, no matter what some folks say. Some folks like to scold, some folks do, some folks do. They'll soon be dead and cold. But that's not me nor you. Long live the merry, merry heart that laughs by night and day, like the Queen of Mirth, no matter what some folks say.
That was John Thade singing the Stephen Foster song, Some Folks Do. And another of my favorite Stephen Foster songs, and I'm going to say that this is dating me, born in the mid-50s, and my mother going crazy with four little kids, including twins, used to play a children's chorus singing Stephen Foster song. So I grew up listening to these recordings, and I always loved Nellie Bly.
Shuts her eye when she goes to see her. When she wakens up again, her eye falls in to be. The way she walks, she lifts her foot, and then she brings it down. And where it lies, there's music dark. In that part of the town.
And that's the Robert Shaw chorus singing Nellie Bly. Wasn't Nellie Bly like a journalist or something? Or
yeah, you thought the song was written for the journalist, but it was actually a woman reporter who named herself Nellie Bly, her pen name, when she went into the asylums to expose the mistreatment of people, traveled around the world. That was the famous Nellie Bly.
She named herself
after the song.
The woman who traveled around the world named herself like a pen name.
Yep. Then.
Well, it's amazing how many songs that we've come to know and love in America and around the world were written by non-believers, non-religious, iconoclasts, non-conformists, like Stephen Foster.
And you hear a lot of Stephen Foster at July 4th celebrations because it's so nostalgic, so 19th century, and people don't realize who's contributing all of this artistry.
Well, Stephen Foster was like, you know, Gershwin and Cole Porter and Irving Berlin and Jerome Kern and all these others and Yip Harburg, they really loved music. One biographer said of Irving Berlin, music was his religion. That's what motivated those people.
And of course, my bone to pick with Irving Berlin is this God Bless America song that gets thrown in our faces every July 4th.
And yeah, but don't be too hard on him. He didn't write that for his own views.
Right.
He wrote that for someone else. He wrote now that for a character.
Well, we're listening to Oh Susanna now, and as we go out, well, who are we going to listen, who are going to come back with to
interview? Well, after the break, we're going to talk to a Pentecostal preacher who saw the light. He's become an atheist, Jerry DeWitt. We've had him on the show before, but he has a new book out. It's called Hope After Faith, An Ex-Pastor's Journey from Belief to Atheism. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
Some of my earliest memories was laying my head upon my grandmother's lap and her praying in other tongues for my earache. Some of the first words I heard were unintelligible. And so you may ask yourself, how is it that a person can come this far? That maybe he once stood in a Pentecostal pulpit and preached what he believed to be the gospel, but now he's here somehow celebrating the notion that the future may be one day free of religion. Can I get a Darwin?
Can I get a Darwin? That's Jerry DeWitt, former Pentecostal preacher, who's now an atheist, speaking at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's conference in Portland, Oregon, and that he was talking before 900 very happy freethinkers.
We spoke with Jerry last on Free Thought Radio. Actually, we played that longer segment earlier this spring. It was a lot of fun, but we spoke last with Jerry in the summer of 2011 when you had just left the ministry, and Jerry now has a book about his story that just came out, Hope After Faith, An Ex-Pastor's Journey from Belief to Atheism, with Ethan Brown. And who published that, Dan?
It's DeCapo Press. Came out on June the 25th. It's a Perseus book group. So, Jerry, welcome back to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be here. My smile is a mile wide listening to my silliness at the convention in Portland.
So we're talking to you from exactly where are you right now?
I am on the side of Interstate 10. In South Louisiana, heading towards Baton Rouge. I'm just a little ways east of Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Are you heading down to do a sermon or something?
Actually, I'm heading down to the hotel that we are going to be using from time to time for a secular service.
Wow, a secular service. Well, let's talk about that in a minute.
Sure.
You know, this is we're celebrating America's independence this week. And you are celebrating 2 years of independence from what you say in your book, from the delusion of faith. And
right.
I have a copy of your new book in my hands here.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's exciting times. It means a lot to me to be interviewed by the both of you again, because it occurred to me a few days ago, I was rearranging my office, and I came across the notes that I had used to prepare for our original interview back in September of 2011. And it was those notes that began to formulate my story into the narrative that became the book. So really, preparing for your interview is the genesis of the book.
So why prepare for an interview? Why not just let the Spirit lead, you know?
I probably do too much of that now, but that was my very first interview.
Wow.
And so I was extremely nervous and felt like I needed to almost write a book in order to be prepared. But y'all were both so lovely to me that it just went its own direction. So, well, I should have left it to the Spirit.
We want to talk about what's happened in the last 2 years. But I want to say I'm holding a copy of your new book that came out June the 25th. It's called Hope After Faith, An Ex-Pastor's Journey from Belief to Atheism. And you're standing there in front of a church, and I think it says Grace. Is that the church that you left? What is that church behind you in the picture?
That's what we would refer to as the mother church. That is the church that I worked out of. I pastored satellite churches that were under the umbrella of that church on the cover of the book, which is called Grace of DeRitter. I pastored Grace of DeQuincy And I also pastored First Community Church, which was also became a satellite church of Grace of DeRidder.
And that's in Louisiana?
In Louisiana, in DeRidder, Louisiana.
So I'm looking at the table of contents here, and it's really cute what you did here. Of course, I read the book. I read the book already, and really
right.
Like
you
it.
Did a fantastic blurb for it. Thank you very much.
I forgot what I said, but I'm sure it was worthy. It was meritorious, because the book is amazing. And your table of contents. I like how you lay it out here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1.
Right.
God loves everyone. 2.
Right.
God saves everyone. 3. God is in everyone. 4. God is everyone's internal dialogue. And 5,
right.
God is a delusion. What an incredible right. transformation.
Yeah, so, and all of that really came from preparing for the first interview with both of you. I was trying to figure out, I never really had to address the question before your interview of how did I really get here. I was just living the experience. You know, every day was a day that was filled with responsibilities like everyone else's life. But in the background, there was this other program that was running that was working me through and eventually out of the theology of my childhood. So I had to sit down and say, what were the steps? How did this come about? And one of these days, I'll take a picture. I actually wrote the notes, drew out the outline on the back of one of the Freedom From Religion newsletters.
Okay.
So I can lay it out and show you step by step how this all took place.
You told us in that last interview your story, but can you briefly summarize it in a minute or two? I mean, you were a preacher
sure.
for 25 years and all of that.
Yeah, so I was raised in a very religious environment. My grandparents were Pentecostals. At age 17, I got saved at Jimmy Swaggart's church. I immediately went into the ministry. For the next 10 years or so, I was a Pentecostal evangelist. Then I moved into the charismatic movement. You know, I got married at age 20. We had our son, you know, when I was 22 years of age. And life was just snowballing, and this ministry, that was our passion. That was our world. But in the background, like I said a moment ago, there was this other program that was running where I was trying to get to the bottom of questions that I think so many times, especially people in the Pentecostal world, avoid. And here we are now.
So 25 years of gradually changing your views. Well, you know, I went through the same process, and you, Jerry,
right.
are we're calling you the first graduate, if that's the right word, of the
right.
Clergy Project. We have
right.
more than 400 other clergy, priests, ministers, rabbis, ordained clergy who used
right.
to believe and now have rejected belief in the supernatural. And
right.
from reading your book, your story is quite unique, especially with the Pentecostalism, but it parallels the other former clergy as well, and that the thirst for truth. And I think in your case, from reading your book and from just knowing you personally, what really motivated you was your genuine love for humanity. And you couldn't,
that's right.
you couldn't make that square with Christianity or the Bible's conception
that's
of humanity.
Right. From the very beginning, at age 17, I had heard about hell all of my life, and had really taken it somewhat for granted, had taken the doctrine of eternal punishment for granted. So when all of a sudden I'm 17 years old, I'm standing in the pulpit, and now it's my responsibility to look out at the congregation, look into the eyes of family members and friends that I love as dearly as my own kin, and tell them that for the slightest offense, the creator of the universe has created an economy that will ultimately doom them to hell, like being trapped in a house fire for all of eternity. That's something I begin to take very seriously. And my love for humanity challenged that idea and said, you know, you need to study this, boy. You need to get to the bottom of this. If you need to tell them this, then you need to know it's right. If it's not right, then don't abuse them emotionally by telling them this. And that was the beginning of the end. Unfortunately, it took 25 years for me to work through all the different layers. Even though I had given up on eternal punishment, I still very much had a relationship with Christ. I still very much loved the Bible and really was very much in love with this idea of Christianity that I'd been given. So it was a very, very slow and painful process to work my way through all of those different phases.
So, Jerry, when I met Dan, he he was kind of where you are now. He had just come out of the ministry. And those are the kinds of things that Dan would say. You know, he had a relationship with Christ. He was in love with his faith. Now, I grew up without any religion. And so my question is, how can you have a relationship with an imaginary being? But maybe you can explain what you meant by that and how that relationship was severed.
Yeah. Well, there's two sides to this. One is, you know, being Pentecostal, there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of sensations. The environment that we create within our Pentecostal services, they generate sensations. They generate goosebumps. They generate internal emotions that you don't feel usually in your day, you know, day-to-day life. And you're taught that these sensations, whether they're just emotional or they're tangible, that this is evidence that God is in the room, that the Holy Spirit is passing through you, that God is speaking to you. And so when you're brought up believing that that's what that means, then you think that's a relationship. So just like your lover might hold your hand, feeling that those sensations are clues, are evidence within your mind that you're actually being in a relationship with Christ. The other side of it is you can't underestimate the power of the religious imagination, where the simplest things happen in your life, things that truly are coincidences, but yet you have this layer of mythology setting upon reality that says that's not a coincidence, that's the hand of God moving on your behalf.
I think the truth probably is that Annie Laurie is just spiritually blind. She doesn't really... Isn't that what you would...
What it is, Dan. She wants to live in sin, and since she wants to live in sin, she just will not accept the truth.
We're talking with Jerry DeWitt, author of the new book, Hope After Faith.
You shouldn't gang up on me.
Hope After Faith, an ex-pastor's journey from belief to atheism. And after the break, Jerry, I want to ask you what's happened in the last 2 years since we talked to you. Have you landed on your feet? I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
This is Free Thought Radio with your hosts, Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie.
And we're continuing our talk with Jerry DeWitt. His new book is called Hope After Faith, an ex-pastor's journey from belief to atheism. And if any of you listeners want to know how you can help save a preacher, Jerry's going to tell you that he's still landing on his feet. You can actually tangibly help a preacher by buying a copy of his brand new book. It's co-written with Ethan Brown. It tells a remarkable story of how a Pentecostal preacher of 25 years became an atheist and what has happened in his life so that he, like me, is now from apostle to apostate. So, Jerry, can I read the blurb on the back of your book that Richard Dawkins wrote?
Oh, please do.
Richard Dawkins, author of The God Delusion. The clergyman who sees the light loses his faith and realizes that his life's work has been empty delusion, faces worse than inner torment. In small-town America, he confronts public ostracism, family breakup, and financial ruin. Such was the predicament of Jerry DeWitt. Brother DeWitt has landed on his feet, but many others still wrestle in the closet with the pain. This poignant book will give them strength. That's Richard Dawkins. So, Jerry, have you landed on your feet? What has happened since then?
Yeah, I'm working on it. And let me say, to have Richard Dawkins call me Brother DeWitt, there's just something awesome about that.
Yeah.
It almost gives me goosebumps. Yeah. I'm working on landing on my feet. Obviously, the book is helping. I'm creating this new world. What I discovered as soon as I came out and I started touring the country, that there's really no way around me being a preacher. This is what I've done for 25 years. So I'm trying to find out, you know, how much of a secular ministry can the world absorb? So I'm working on landing on my feet. But, you know, since our interview, September of 2011, we joked about me losing my job. December the 1st, 2 months, you know, 2 or 3 months after that interview, I did lose my job, my secular job. It wouldn't be long after that that the house would fall into foreclosure.
Was that for was that because of your views?
Actually, it was because of that interview.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope it wasn't because of the radio show. How did that get around?
Yeah, I don't. Well, it got around a couple of different ways. The main way that it got around was I've got this wonderful, beautiful person in my life who we call Aunt Grace. And Aunt Grace is in her 80s but loves Facebook, and she saw the few changes that I made to my Facebook page. And before long, everybody in my family and in my community knew what was going on. And that made its way. You know, my town's only 10,000. We don't call our counties. We call them parishes. And it's only 40,000 people. So it didn't take long for the people that I worked with to find out what was going on. And my boss literally laid in front of me a printout of the Clergy Project's webpage that had the interview on it with my name there.
Wow. So you can't blame us then. It's Auntie Grace.
No, I don't blame anybody at all.
Oh, but that makes me feel rotten.
No. Okay, so that's the downside. You know, my wife, there was so much ostracism, she felt like she had to leave the state, you know, so there was family breakup, and there was financial disasters, and there was all those things, and I'm still trying to recover my relationship with her. I'm still trying to get my finances back. But on the other hand, there is a Jerry DeWitt. The real Jerry DeWitt is now footloose and fancy free in the world, expressing his reality. So I could never hold it against anyone that my life has gone the direction it has. I'm extremely excited about it.
A lot of the other members of the Clergy Project say something similar, that integrity usually has a high price, but it's worth it. It's worth paying that price.
It is. It is absolutely worth it. You know, the book is to me my contribution to the world, and in particular my contribution to people like me, especially Pentecostals. I can't tell you how many people have read the book that have contacted me and said, you know, this is my life. I didn't know anyone else was living this life. People who even went to Jimmy Swaggart's church, just like, you know, like I had gone to it and gotten saved. It is a gift to be able to live this life with the freedom that I'm living it with.
Briefly, tell our listeners, what is Pentecostalism?
Oh, my gracious. That's a wonderful story. Believe it or not, Pentecostalism is actually just a religious fad that caught on after the turn of the 20th century. And it is where all of a sudden mainstream theology got hijacked by this idea of speaking in other tongues and the gifts of the Spirit. And that was related back to some of the writings within the early church. And it's what we now refer to mostly as the charismatic movement, or you coming off of the word charisma, where people live a life they believe that is possessed by the Holy Spirit.
Well, Jerry, I'm going to put you on the spot. Dan will not speak in tongues for, you know, he won't perform.
I can do it privately.
He's too embarrassed.
Right.
But do you do that? Can you, like, recreate the...
I can absolutely do it, but I'm going to have to disappoint you as well. What I've said now for a year is I can't do it as long as my grandmother's alive.
Ah, okay.
That would just be a step too far. But honestly, every great once in a while, it will even happen by accident. I'll be driving down the road. The emotions will be just right. I'll be listening to some music, secular music, that is really resonating with where I'm at in my life at that moment, and it will trigger what is now an automatic response, and I'll speak in tongues.
Well, it's a very real experience, a very powerful experience, and very creative in the mind. It doesn't point to anything outside of the brain, but it sure feels like it does, doesn't it? Like you're in touch with something transcendent or something.
You truly feel like that you are a channel, and that you are channeling the Spirit of God, the presence of God, something divine, and that it is God speaking through you. Absolutely. There's a reason why Pentecostalism, the charismatic movement, has really hijacked almost all of Christianity. Now, even in the most conservative Baptist churches on the planet, they have to have some form of music that resembles charismatic music. And the reason why is because these experiences are so powerful. That's the reason why we're working on having secular services, because we know human beings want to experience emotion.
Well, I know a lot of people that were at our convention in Portland last fall, when they heard you preach, in quotes, some of them
right.
said they were getting goosebumps just from the, I guess, the theatricality of it or something.
Sure.
There's something in
sure.
our brain that resonates with that
well,
voice.
And then and having the audience participate instead of, can I get an amen, can I get a Darwin, was very fun.
Right.
That is fun.
Right. Some people hate it. And I understand some people's, you know, their lives have been so traumatic that they absolutely hate it. Some people think it causes confusion and, you know, gives a few points, you know, to the religious argument. So there's a lot of different opinions, but there's some people that actually enjoy it and look forward to it. And
now
we must
hawk your book and save a preacher, Hope After Faith, an ex-pastor's journey from belief to atheism. Jerry, how can people order that?
There's a lot of good ways they can order it. Obviously, it's in the bookstores, so they can go and get it at all the major bookstores. But also, they can go to hopeafterfaith.com
okay.
and they can choose the online source they want to go to.
Thank you so much.
We're out of time, Jerry. This is Free Thought Radio, produced in Madison, Wisconsin.
Tune in next week. We will be back from Ireland, and we will be telling you what's going on with atheism, abortion, and blasphemy in Ireland. And you can join FFRF at ffrf.org. You can download the podcast at ffrf.org/radio and iTunes and so on. Tune in next week, and we'll be back with more Rational Radio.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, ffrf.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.